Just for a moment, forget the here and now. Leap forward with me some 45 years into the future. Listen to the news.
Mr. President, look over here, please.
Mr. Prime Minister.
Mr. Prime Minister.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Well, the Russians have had better luck with the weather for the 2050 summit of the G7 than the Chinese did last year. The sun is blazing down on the Kremlin.
Mr. President,
this way, please.
You join us just as the leaders of the world's seven richest countries are lining up for the traditional photo call. It's a...
Oh, my God.
Well, this is rather extraordinary. The President of the United States has just elbowed her way past her Brazilian, Russian and Japanese counterparts to rather rudely squeeze in at the centre of the row between the leaders of China and India. It's a bizarre sight. All I can think of is that the Americans are still having a hard time accepting that they're no longer the centre of the world.
The news in 2050, as it just might be, a huge upheaval in the global landscape, new players in the great game of nations, new countries at the top table of the world. That's the powerful thesis from an influential source, the giant American investment bank Goldman Sachs. I'm Peter Day, and over the next 4 weeks I'll be looking at the BRICS, the thesis that Brazil, Russia, India and China, BRICS, you see, will be global economic powerhouses by 2050. If it's right, then our world is about to change dramatically. Let's start here in Fleet Street, once a mighty newspaper centre, now home to the London offices of Goldman Sachs, the base for the man behind the BRICS thesis, their global economist, Jim O'Neill. Let's begin at the beginning. How is the world going to change in the next 50 years?
I think it's potentially going to change dramatically. If other countries allow globalization to help them and the demographics work as the way they seem to, as though they're going to work, before 2050, there will only be two of the current G7 that are part of the G7 in terms of size. That would be the US and Japan.
Okay, I know this is radio, but let's look at this. We have a map of the world here, and now in sort of economic terms, North America is absolutely enormous. Japan is pretty big, if this is done in relative size of economies rather than size of geographies. And then Europe is also pretty big. Those are the main players, the main top table players at the moment.
Yep.
The rest are tiny by comparison, aren't they?
Well, China has just, in the past couple of years, as people probably know, overtaken Italy and is currently sitting just behind France and the UK. But, you know, that is nothing compared with what we're about to see unfold over the next 20 plus years. If we're right, there are enormous opportunities in consumer goods industries, particularly in China and India, but also in Russia and Brazil. And many global consumer goods industries will be transformed by this process.
And here I am investigating those consumer goods industries Jim O'Neill just talked about. I'm in Brazil's business capital, Sao Paulo, and I'm in Dasloo. It's one of the most extravagant department stores I've ever seen anywhere, with elegant personal shopping assistants standing by to escort high-spending clients into a discreet world of luxury. China's hunger for raw materials has injected huge sums of money into Brazil in recent years, and some of it's clearly being spent here, just a few hundred yards from one of Sao Paulo's infamous favelas, or slums. I'm here for a tour of what Priscilla Castelo Branco of Dasloo insists is more than just a shopping centre.
It's not a mall. It's not.
What is it then?
Just like magical. It's magical.
Okay, magic away then.
So let's go. This first floor, men are not allowed, only women. Because we don't have, how do you say, for you to change.
Changing room.
We don't have that. It's everything open, like in your house, women, everyone changing and picking up clothes. And then if men wants to come and buy something for their wives or for their friend or something, we have our sellers who come and they help you.
Yeah, well, that's the way the world is going. Concierges,
is it?
If I come in and suddenly want an embarrassingly flimsy piece of lingerie for somebody I know.
She comes and she will show you all our models and then you choose which one you want.
Perfect.
Chanel, right in front of us. Louis Vuitton, and Giuhenieri, that's our flower store.
Oh, and the Greek gods, or the Roman gods, are they? No, what are they? Greek or Roman?
I don't know, actually. We can.
But they're wreathed. They're wreathed. So they're, except for the ones with pots on their heads, they're wreathed.
It's only decoration.
Are there other places like this in Brazil?
No.
Why has it happened here in Sao Paulo, then?
Why has it happened?
Because I'm looking long, taking a long view, a long-term view, looking right out into the 21st century, when some economists think Brazil, Russia, India and China are going to be right up at the top of the most economically powerful nations. Mm-hmm. And this is a little bit of a preview, isn't it?
I hope so. But Brazil is a very poor country.
Yes, exactly. That's why it's so bizarre to have this in Brazil.
It's a very poor country, but we do have few people with economic power.
And they come here.
They do.
As a barista dispenses strong and complimentary coffee to the store's visitors, I'm joined by a chic woman who runs Dazlu's glossy magazine. Patricia Ramalho has her own insights into Brazil's changing fortunes.
If you come to Brazil, you realize there are two Brazils. I wouldn't say only about rich Brazil and poor Brazil, but I would tell you serious Brazil, private Brazil, and public Brazil. 10 years ago, you couldn't have a telephone. You had to wait like 3 years to get a line, and then suddenly they privatized, and now, you know, it's a market. You can have a telephone. Prices are going down.
But this gap between the rich and the poor, which is so extreme here.
Yes, it's very extreme. This is why you have a thousand.
Which is why you have this house here, but very close you have a favela.
And people intend to blame Dazlu. No, we would love to have tons of Dazlus and no favelas. This would be the good thing. It's not Dazlu's fault that you have the favelas. It's not the case at all.